Cause number 1322575CV, Texas State Guard versus Enedelia Cruz.
May it please the court. There is no basis in law or fact that can establish subject matter jurisdiction in this case. A plea to the jurisdiction follows the standard of summary judgment, but there is no evidence in the record of this case that controverts the proven fact that at the time of the motor vehicle collision at issue here, Texas State Guard member Ronnie Littles was on active duty for the state and was performing a military activity under the lawful orders of his chain of command. That is, he was in the process of driving back from his mission of servicing cameras along the border in a vehicle provided by the state, and he was driving back to the U.S. Border Patrol headquarters. Nothing in the record shows otherwise, and appellees have met no evidence at all to even attempt to controvert that fact. That alone entitles appellant dismissal of this case with prejudice under Section 101.054 of the Texas Tort Claims Act.
And appellants have argued that he was not anywhere near the equipment that he was servicing on that day, and the fact that he was, I guess, not actually performing his duties of servicing the equipment should make a distinction.
Judge, this court has held in the case of Clanton versus Interstate Communications that a person returning from his mission to which the person was sent to by their employer is evidence that the employee was in course and scope of employment. In the case of Clanton, this case is different from the case of Clanton. In the case of Clanton, this court said that is enough to overturn a summary judgment. That is enough to controvert the evidence that he was not in course and scope. Here,
because he was on his way home, was that the difference there? Or
no, in the case of Clanton, Your Honor, the employee was. I believe you're right. He was on his way home. He was returning from McAllen, going back to Corpus Christi. But the reason why that case is different from this case is that in that case, that evidence was used to overturn a summary judgment. That is, that was the evidence raised by the plaintiff to raise a question of fact. Here, appellees submitted no evidence at all to show otherwise, to show that Ronnie Littles was deviating from his mission, from his route, that he was not doing anything that has to do with the military. There is nothing of the sort in this case. All we have is the not conclusively established fact that at the time of the motor vehicle collision, he was returning from his mission. And that alone places Ronnie Littles in course and scope, and conclusively proves that he was in course and scope absent any controverting evidence. That is not the only reason, however, that negates subject matter jurisdiction in this case. It is settled that the statute of limitations is a jurisdictional prerequisite to suit in all suits against the state. But appellee did not file suit against the Texas State Guard until 7 months after the statute of limitations expired. Nor was appellee prevented or disadvantaged in any way from suing the Guard. As discussed in the briefing, the prior defendant, DPS, first notified appellee that Ronnie Littles was a Texas State Guard service member. This was 5 months before the statute of limitations expired. But what did appellee do? Appellee sat on her hands. Appellee did not name any new defendants, did not conduct any further discovery, and did not otherwise try to ascertain the correct defendant in this case.
Now, you stated in your brief that you notified them that Little was a potential party to this lawsuit. Is that somewhere separate other than the response to the disclosure? Because the response to the disclosure simply listed as a person having knowledge of relevant facts.
At that time, Your Honor, it was DPS who was responding to the disclosures, not the Texas State Guard. Under that framework, under that structure of the litigation, if they are trying to establish liability against the Texas Department of Public Safety, then the Texas State Guard will be a responsible third party. the way that that litigation was structured. So DPS, not only did DPS notify appellee that Littles was a Texas State Guard member, but at no point did DPS ever suggest that it was the correct party. At no point did DPS ever indicate that Littles was its employee. Otherwise, DPS would have listed Littles as an employee of DPS in the disclosures. Appellant's briefing also addresses the distinction between misnomer and misidentification, because appellee raised these two doctrines to attempt to toll the statute of limitations, but it is clear that neither of those doctrines apply. Misnomer does not apply because this is not a case where the correct defendant was sued, but was just named incorrectly in the pleadings in the litigation. And misidentification cannot apply because, one, the Texas State Guard never got notice of this lawsuit until it was served with process after the statute of limitations expired. And two, DPS and the Texas State Guard are not related entities that use a similar trade name. That conclusively disproves the application of misidentification to this case. In any way, this court analyzes this case, whether through the Texas Tort Claims Act or through the statute of limitations, there is no basis in law or fact that can establish subject matter jurisdiction in this case. All the facts that the Texas State Guard put forth in support of its plea to a jurisdiction are conclusively proven, because again, appellee did not submit any evidence to attempt to controvert any facts, even after having an adequate time to conduct discovery in this case. If you look at the dates, if this court looks at the dates that the plea to a jurisdiction was argued back in 2021, even at that point, appellee had already had adequate time to conduct discovery. This case was originally filed back in 2018. So again,
the deposition of the Littles was not taken or anything of that nature.
No, Your Honor. Appellee did not conduct any discovery before we proceeded to the plea to a jurisdiction. During that whole entire time, there was no discovery at all in this case, other than the disclosures that were exchanged between the parties. But this is why the trial court erred by denying the plea to a jurisdiction. There is absolutely no basis to deny it. Unless Your Honors have any further questions at this time, I'll reserve any further argument for my rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, may I please the court?
You may proceed.
First of all, I want to point out that we are not here on a motion for summary judgment, which is what the appellant's main argument is this morning. And we're not here to argue whether that motion for summary judgment was proper or not proper. We did offer, as part of our exhibits, the crash report for the incident. In there, it does indicate that Mr. Littles was traveling south as opposed to north at the time of the incident. If he had been working on the border, he would have been traveling north back to the DPS headquarters in McAllen. So there was a fact issue there, but nonetheless, you know, we're not here on summary judgment. What we're here about, judges.
But the plea to the jurisdiction procedure can mirror that of a summary judgment.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct, Your Honor. But appellant's statement that we offer no controverting evidence that he had deviated from the scope of his employment is incorrect. We did. If the court will review the crash report, it provides a narrative of the
and
crash.
That crash report was provided to the trial court in response to the plea to jurisdiction, or is it only on appeal as an exhibit?
I believe it's only on appeal as an exhibit, Your Honor. And it is de novo review here that we're before the court this morning. Your Honor, I also want to point out that appellant, although he's trying to separate the DPS from the Texas State Guard, both entities, governmental entities, were represented by the Attorney General's office. Both entities were represented by counsel for who's here for the appellant this morning. So his argument that Texas State Guard was not on notice of this lawsuit until sometime in 2020 is factually incorrect. They've known about it since 2018 when the original lawsuit was filed.
But how do you distinguish the case that they cited in their brief, University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center versus Taylor? That seems to be right on point. Well, we have same thing there, and the office of the AG represented, and the same assistant attorney general represented UT system, later represented UTSW, but the court said that didn't mean that there was notice of suit to UTSW before the limitations ran.
Yes, the difference here and from that case, Your Honor, is that here we're talking about, it's a tale of four entities that we're talking about in this case. Between 2017 and 2020, there was an issue on who was the owner of the pickup, unmarked pickup, not a military pickup, ordinary pickup, that Littles was driving at the time of the collision. There was an issue on whether Littles was working for DPS or another entity. And at the beginning, it started with, if you refer to the crash report, indicates that Littles was working for an agency or an entity called Robertson Special Air Services, who supposedly owned this pickup that he was driving at the time that he crashed into Ms. Cruz's car. And that is listed as an entity out of San Antonio. Then through the information that was exchanged discovery, it turned out that the vehicle may have been owned by DPS. And Mr. Littles may have been working for DPS as part of a interlocutory agreement between the state and DPS and the different agencies that are down here and have been down here for years. And so DPS out of Austin, it turned out to be the owner of the vehicle, as I understand. And then in responding to request for disclosures, DPS indicated that the Texas Military Department was listed as a potential party and was trying to shift liability to the Texas Military Department, contending that somehow they were either on the vehicle or Littles was an employee of the Texas Military Department, and that's an entity out of Austin. And finally, in 2020, when we finally discovered through no cooperation from the appellant's counsel in terms of answering discovery, that Texas State Guard out of Austin turned out to be Little's employer. We amended our petition and made allegations of negligence and made a claim for personal injury against not Littles personally or individually, because that's not allowed, but against this Texas State Guard. And the main argument that they have this morning is that because he is military, active duty military, was performing military duties, that he can have a collision, whether it results in a catastrophic injury or even a death, and he can walk, and Littles could walk away from that without any liability. Here, fortunately, Ms. Cruz did not suffer catastrophic injuries. She was not obviously killed in this case, but she was hurt. She was hurt when this pickup crashed into her vehicle. And so we filed a lawsuit after following this maze of entities that the appellant had produced or disclosed as potential owners of the vehicle, potential employers of Littles at the time of the collision.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. Why was the response by DPS on February 13, 2019, before the statute of limitations expired, where they identified Littles as employed by Texas Military Department, Texas State Guard. Why is that not sufficient notice to your client to have then amended the petition and brought in Texas State Guard?
Your Honor, because the Texas military is made up of four different entities. The Texas Military Department includes the Texas National Guard, the Texas Army National Guard, and the Texas Air National Guard. And it doesn't mention anything about, they had identified the Texas Military Department as a potential party, and they didn't ever, and to this date, they haven't identified Texas State Guard as the correct defendant in this case. In fact, the we went through preliminary litigation. They've never filed a defensive pleading claiming that there was a defect in parties or that we had sued the wrong parties. They simply went and tried to get the case dismissed on the basis that he's military, so he can cause an injury, be negligent, and he can walk away. You know, an extension of the argument that they're making is that because of Section 101.054 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which is the one they're relying on this morning, because that applies, that they cannot sue, we cannot sue Texas State Guard or DPA, or, well, Texas State Guard in this case, or the Texas Army National Guard or Texas Air National Guard or Texas, or any department of the military, Texas Military Department, on that basis. And if you carry that argument further, Judge, in this case, when the investigation was done by DPS, state agency, appellants, the initial defendant in this case, they found both drivers to be, to have contributed to the accident. And both drivers, including Littles, claims that they were injured in the collision. So if you take the appellant's argument a step further and say, what if Mr. Littles had decided to sue Ms. Cruz for his personal injuries because he was hurt, had some medical expenses, had lost wages or loss of earning capacity? If you follow their argument or you extend their argument, that would mean that Ms. Cruz, who also was injured and who may have been less responsible for the collision, could not file a counterclaim. And in Texas, if there's a collision or an occurrence that the facts come out of, and if Littles had sued Ms. Cruz, Ms. Cruz would have been forced to file a compulsory counterclaim as part of the lawsuit. And then we would go to court and they would say, we can sue her, but she can't sue us back. That's patently unfair.
It would be an interesting scenario. Perhaps maybe there could be a waiver argument or something if Littles chose to sue, or I don't know, that would be interesting. But yes, that's not what we have before us. So the question I have for you, though, is you argued earlier that the police report shows that Littles was driving in the opposite direction of where he should have been driving had he been heading to headquarters. So if that's true and it's properly proved up in the record, are you arguing then that he was not in course and scope such that there's no waiver under the statute? And if you are, then doesn't that take you out of the statute, because don't you have to have course and scope to be covered under the Texas Tort Claims Act?
Yes, Your Honor, but we're not claiming that he was not within course and scope. We're arguing that
he was not performing military duties.
He had, yes, he was not performing. That's their argument under to try to get the case dismissed, is that he has to be actually performing the
military active duty. The statute says on active duty.
Active duty, performing military duties. Basically here, he was driving in the wrong direction when he crashed into Mrs. Cruz's car. So at minimum, there's a fact issue on that. that we need to, we didn't get an opportunity to depose Mr. Littles before the pleaded jurisdiction was done. So our main argument, Judge, is that it's the Texas State Guard, which was created, by the way, pursuant to which is a state militia, was organized under the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and was is an operating defense force authorized under Section 32 U.S.C. Code 109, which is federal code, and under the so Little was working with a state agency that had federal oversight, or was created by federal statute and an amendment. And our argument in reply to them saying that we can't sue under any circumstances is that under the Federal Tort Claims Act, if this had been a federal National Guard employee, we would have been able to file suit. And here, since this entity is not your regular National Guard, it's not your regular Army or Air Force, it's a state-created militia that was formed, separate part of it, but separate and apart, that we should be able to also bring a claim against them because there is a federal statute creating this entity. And under the 14th Amendment, we believe that Ms. Cruz's rights have been violated by the statute in that it completely precludes her from asserting a claim in court. In Texas state court, it violates the Texas open court provision, it violates the Texas Constitution, and it violates the U.S. Constitution. Earlier, we had a clerk that was sworn in to uphold the Constitution of the U.S. and as well as the Constitution of this state. And here, Ms. Cruz is being deprived of her property right to bring suit under this section that the appellant has tried to use against her. At the beginning, when the AG's office sent their denial letter, they were blaming her for the accident. It's like our investigation by DPS concludes that Ms. Cruz is at fault, so we're denying your claim. That was a false statement because the investigation by DPS indicated that both parties may have been at fault or responsible. So they tried from the beginning to deny it, and once DPS was sued, they tried to shift liability to other entities, and finally we ended up with a Texas State Guard. We worked our way through the weeds and found that they owned the truck, or DPS owned the truck, and that Littles was working for the Texas State Guard. And so we're asking the court to find that the statute that they're relying on is unconstitutional. I was talking to my colleague earlier today.
It's a big ask.
I'm sorry?
It's a big ask.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. And I was talking to my colleague earlier today. Some time ago, years ago, there was a municipal court judge in a neighboring county who presided over a seatbelt case, and it was a jury trial, and the jury found the defendant guilty of not wearing a seatbelt. Municipal judge declared the seatbelt law unconstitutional. So it's been done. In this case, we're not talking about a Class C ticket. What we're talking about is Ms. Cruz being able to be compensated for the injuries that were caused by Little, in this case, through his negligence, and that this statute shouldn't protect and provide an absolute bar from that right under the state constitution, open courts provision, and of course due process, 14th Amendment basis. With regard to the limitations issue, we've responded in basically in the way that I believe defendants would respond is that, you know, who's the party to this case? Who was responsible for this collision? Who owned the vehicle? Who was Lil's working for? And
well, wasn't it incumbent upon you, though, to do more discovery prior to the statute of limitations, like take a deposition and explore that issue?
Yes, Your Honor, and, you know, I can't...
You have to show some
diligence. I can't go back to, you know, 2018 to see what happened there, but...
Well, I know we did have a pandemic in between there, too.
That
probably interrupted a few things,
that
but...
That, too, Judge. I mean, we're just... When the lawsuit, the amended petition was filed against Texas State Guard, we were just going... We were just about to start the pandemic. It had... It was in February 2020. And there was a lot of confusion as to, you know, the origins of this virus and whether it's here or not. And then things started to close down the month after that.
Well, except the statute of limitations expired in July of 19. So my question was, you know, wasn't it? Yeah. So my question was, prior to the expiration of the statute of limitations in July 19, would it incumbent upon you to use, you know, more due diligence in ascertaining the proper parties?
We did, Your Honor, and I want to point out that they really did not fully disclose that Texas State Guard may be the correct party to this case until February 2020. I want to say February 18, 2020. And right before the pandemic, and you know, so it would have been a little bit hard to start discovery at that time. And I don't know why they waited until February of 2020 to finally tell us that this may be the correct entity, because they had been on notice of this claim since 2018 for over 2 years. And I think, I don't want to characterize this as kind of hiding the ball or playing a shell game, but it seemed like they never really disclosed who's responsible until 2020. And under the relations back doctrine, we sued the correct employee. We thought we had sued the correct employer. Same accident, same vehicle, same collision, same personal injuries. Were asserted in 2020 that had been asserted 2 years earlier. And so we would contend that the relations back doctrine would relate the lawsuit back to 2018 at the time of the original filing. And importantly is, most important is that Texas State Guard hasn't been harmed or prejudiced in any way in this case by having to defend a lawsuit that they were defending on behalf of DPS earlier, starting in 2018. But our client, Ms. Cruz, will be greatly harmed and prejudiced if her right to bring this claim is completely done away with, and she has to just walk away and say, sorry. Military duty, active military duty caused these injuries, so I got to walk away. And I guess that fortunately she, you know, she has some injuries. Unfortunately, they were not catastrophic or fatal. But, you know, the question I would ask appellant is, let's say this was a catastrophic injury or a fatality. Would appellant still feel it was fair and right for them to say, we killed your client, but you can't sue us?
Thank you, Mr. Bain.
Thank you.
May I proceed?
You may proceed, yes.
Very briefly, we all worked during the pandemic and conducted Zoom depositions. There was no basis for appellee to not conduct discovery in this case. Now, to the argument that they claim, that appellee claims that Littles was not in active duty, I point this court to section 437.001 of the Texas Government Code, which defines state active duty, and it says it means the performance of military or emergency service for this state at the call of the governor or the governor's designee. That is a very expansive definition of state active duty. Now, the Texas State Guard submitted the crash report as evidence to a splintered jurisdiction, but all that the report shows is that both Enedelia Cruz and Littles claimed that they had the green light. On the contrary, I point this court to the declaration of Joe Cave, Brigadier General Joe Cave. His commanding officer declares that he was on active duty at the time and that he was in the process of returning to the headquarters. Now, appellee did not name the Texas Military Department as a defendant to the extent that they claim that we disclosed that instead of the Guard. Had they thought that that was the correct defendant, then they would have named the Texas Military Department. But then again, at the time that appellee served process on the Guard, it named the Guard. It did not name the Texas Military Department. That shows that they knew all along who the correct defendant was. They just did not want to disclose it for fear of conceding that they blew the statute of limitations. Now, the fact that appellee did not conduct any discovery in this case is apparent in the record. This court can see the absence of discovery in the record. Otherwise, appellee would have cited to the discovery, to the evidence in the record, to controvert the fact that this is not a military activity case. Now, the Texas State Guard did not need to do any kind of special pleading to point out to the defect of parties, because the Texas State Guard filed a plea to the jurisdiction with attached evidence conclusively showing that Littles was performing a military activity, that he was under the command of the Texas State Guard, and that he was proceeding under the lawful orders of the Texas Adjutant General through his chain of command. Now, the Texas State Guard is not a federal entity at all. I point this court to the same statute that appellees cited in their brief, that is Title 32, Section 109 of the U.S. Code. That statute says, this is the federal statute that we're talking about. The statute says, in addition to its National Guard, if any, a state, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the District of Columbia, Guam, or the Virgin Islands may, as provided by its laws, organize and maintain defense forces. A defense force established under this section may be used within the jurisdiction concerned as its chief executive considers necessary, but it may not be called, ordered, or drafted into the armed forces. That statute tells us two things. One, a state can create its own defense force within its jurisdiction, and two, it cannot be drafted into the armed forces. The armed forces are defined as the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Army, or the National Guard, when it can be drafted, or the Air Force. Well, the Texas State Guard cannot be drafted. And also, if this court looks at section 437.001, the definitions, the Texas State Guard is separate from the Texas Army National Guard. Under those definitions, this is subsection 15, Texas National Guard means the Texas Army National Guard and the Texas Air National Guard. That is not the Texas State Guard. And then subsection 16 defines the Texas State Guard differently, or separately rather, as the volunteer military forces that provide community service and emergency response activities for this state as organized under the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution and operating as a defense force authorized under Title 32, U.S. Code Section 109, the same statute that we're talking about that allows the creation of the force purely under the command of the governor and cannot be drafted into the armed forms, can never be put under the command of the federal government.
I find that very interesting. I'd never even heard of this state guard before. And I was reading the definition of it. I thought, oh, okay.
I did not hear about it until I got this case, Your Honor. Now, as to the due process argument, Your Honor, I believe we waived this argument by failing to cite any supporting authorities. But neither sovereign immunity nor the Texas Tort Claims Act can violate appellee's due process rights. As addressed in the briefing, sovereign immunity existed before the creation of the U.S. Constitution and the Texas Constitution. It is a matter of common law that the governor cannot be sued. The king cannot be wrong. That is what that says. And as the Texas Supreme Court explained succinctly in the case of Moreno versus Sterling Drug that is cited in the briefing, when a cause of action is not recognized as common law, but is merely the creature of statute, any abrogation of that statute is not a violation of due process. It only means that the state is simply not granting such an expansive right or such an expansive claim to sue. And that is precisely what the legislature did. With the exception of 101.054 in the Texas Tort Claims Act, saying that Texas military activities are off limits for the waiver of immunity, and two, by requiring that prerequisites to sue be jurisdictional in all suits against the state. This is the textbook example of taking the bitter with the sweet, because it is a creation of the state. And even this court has recognized that reasoning. I cited in the briefing the cases of Stout versus Grand Prairie School District, and also the case of UTMB versus Greenhouse, where they take this reasoning to explain that due process cannot be violated by sovereign immunity or the Texas Tort Claims Act. But even this court has recognized that reasoning, and I point this court to the case of Randy Cox versus Harris County Hospital District. I did not cite it in the briefing, but this is case number 13-97-426-CV. The Westlaw citation for that is 1999 WL 3497-3342. In that case,
say that again. 34.
Yes, Your Honor. It's the Westlaw citation is 1999 Westlaw or WL, and then 3497-3342. That case was about a surgical sponge that was left inside the body of the plaintiff during surgery. And because it was left inside the body, the plaintiff was not able to give pre-suit notice of the claim within 6 months of the occurrence of the tort. And because prerequisites to suit are jurisdictional, that means that there was no waiver of immunity. Now, that case was transferred to this court from the 14th District Court of Appeals, and naturally this court was applying Houston precedents. But there is no doubt that this court recognized that reasoning. This court cited the case of Greenhouse in that opinion of Randy Cox versus Harris County Hospital District to dispose of the case. That court cited the Greenhouse case to say there is no waiver of sovereign immunity because prerequisites to suit are jurisdictional, and it cannot violate due process. Appellee's argument can be summarized as a plea to waive the state's sovereign immunity because the Texas State Guard did not do the case for them. But that is not how litigation works in our adversarial system of justice. For all these reasons, I request that this court reverse the trial court's order denying the Texas State Guard's plea to the jurisdiction and render judgment dismissing this case with prejudice. Thank you. I thank this court for allowing the opportunity to present argument.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case will be under submission.